Hello everyone, welcome to another really cool episode. I know all our episodes are cool, but I don't know, I always say that. Of Retro Rewatch, the show where we rewatch really cool episodes of TV shows that Jeff has never seen before, and I love them. Jeff calls it also our therapy sessions sometimes.
And yes.
Yes, and I have, as you can hear, with me, of course, the aforementioned Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and once again, I'm happy that we are doing this. And I don't know if today will be a therapy session, but any episode has the potential to take us down a therapy session.
I think one way or another, every episode is a therapy session.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, sometimes it's more obvious that it's therapy than others.
Yeah, and sometimes it's good therapy and sometimes it's bad therapy. You know, not every time is the same.
Okay, true. Sometimes the therapy is worth more chevrons than others.
That is unfortunately also true. Yeah, so we are once again watching an episode of Stargate SG-1. Not a surprise if you've seen the title of this episode in your podcast player. But I mean, you never know with us. We might just do another episode of Gilmore Girls or something. Like, or do, I don't know, Elf or something. Like, there's so many shows
on Elf.
Elf. Yes, we could do everything.
I forgot about Elf.
Yeah. Be careful with your cats, might get eaten.
Right.
So, Stargate SG-1, Season 3, Episode 10. So, we're very close to the mid-season, Forever in a Day. So, we talked about that last time. It's kind of, yeah, I mean, in hindsight, you're like, okay, it's obvious, like, what this is about.
It's obvious enough that when I offered up a prediction...
It was pretty close.
My prediction was pretty close.
Yes, it was very, very close. So, yeah, that's why I was like, yeah, I didn't want to tell you that, but it's like, yeah, you're close. Yeah, we have some production notes as usual. We're into October of 1999, so we're closing in on the millennium. October 4th, 2000, it was published in Germany. Has an IMDb rating, slightly up from last week, 7.3 out of 10. So. Yeah, it's okay, I would say. Not the best, not the worst, but people liked it enough that it's a 7.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. People like it.
As mentioned last time as well, we have two returning people that we know very well for the writer and director. We have, of course, Jonathan Glasner back in the writing seat and Peter DeLuise in the directing seat. And I did not see a cameo by him, but I'm sure there was one, or maybe it was just cut. You never know.
I didn't even think about watching for his cameo this time.
Yeah, I tried to check and I also tried to do some research to find it, but nobody seems to like mention it. But since he likes to do that, maybe there was one. As I said, sometimes it might have just ended up being cut somewhere or... whatever.
Yeah, but he could have been a dead Jaffa. He could have been one of the the villagers that's being rescued.
Yeah, there's so many options.
Yeah, maybe he was at the funeral.
Oh, that's also possible, yeah. Maybe he had turned into a tent.
Right. Maybe they wrapped him up like a mummy.
Everything is possible. Yeah, I can tell you who he's not, because that's our guest stars.
Okay.
We have, of course, returning to us after like a long time. It's been a while since we've seen him. Eric Avary as Kazoof. So, from the original movie and then like a couple times after. So it's been a while.
Yeah, now I'm assuming. That because he was in the original movie, and as I recall, isn't he the only actor?
There's three actors, I think, in total that joined.
Right. So now what I'm wondering, is he the one that we see more often? Which of the three actors from the movie that are in the series has the most appearances?
I would almost assume it was him, because the others were killed quite early on. As far as I remember. I would have to check, but I would say at this point, relatively certain that he has the most.
That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But I have nothing but my feeling.
We also have Vaitiare Hirshon, credited as Vaitiare, and I hope I'm not butchering the name too much, Bandera in this episode. This is her final regular appearance, not a surprise since she dies in this episode.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes. So unfortunately, as much as we liked her and as little as we got to see from her, other than that we saw everything from her in the pilot.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunately she's not gonna come back in a regular role, at least. Don't remember if she comes back and like probably, you know, some special flashback, whatever, might have something with her. You never know with us.
I'm assuming there's at least one more clip episode coming up at some point in the future for me to complain about.
But there they would only use clips, so that wouldn't count.
Okay, fair. Yeah,
but they might, you know, they might do something else like they did with Apophis, for example. last episode, right? Jason Schombing as Dr. Robert Rothman. Temporarily joins SG-1. Some funny stuff we have about him later.
Yes.
And of course, our all-time favorite doctor is back. Dr. Dennett Fraser, a.k.a. Terrell Rothery.
It's always a treat to have Doc Fraser in an mm-hmm. episode.
Yes, exactly. German title, and that's why I didn't want to tell you what it was. Charisse Tod, Charisse Death.
Are you kidding me? Seriously?
Yes. It's probably one of the most spoiler-heavy episode titles in the series. I mean, the English title is already mild spoilery. This one is like full-on, okay, we know what's happening.
Is it possible that the people that are responsible for coming with the German titles, mm-hmm. they just hate people?
Well, there's one option, or Germans just don't like surprises. They want to know exactly what's going to happen in the episode before they watch it.
Is that really a thing?
I don't know. I'm probably the least German, so don't ask me. I don't, but it's that maybe Germans just don't like surprises. Could be. Or Germans in the 90s didn't like surprises. Like, maybe they changed. Who knows?
Well, okay, Germany in the 90s, there was a lot that was changing because of, you know, it wasn't that far after reunification.
Yeah,
so, it's sure, possible. Maybe.
Maybe it's possible. That's it. It's just interesting that like all, and I don't remember that being a thing as much like for the shows that I have watched. But then to be fair, I've not watched a German show or German episode in like, I don't know, 25, 30 years probably. So who knows? One thing to note about this is, of course, this complex dream within a dream structure that we have, which in reality seems to be about a couple seconds at the end. So that is quite notable as something that I don't think we've seen like that before. Michael Shanks called this by far the most challenging experience I've ever gone through as an actor. Which, yeah, I can tell. Like, there is some really, really good acting by him in this episode.
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it until mm-hmm. you brought it up. But yes, I agree.
Yeah. Peter DeRuisk did a good job balancing the action sequences with the emotional part. So I think that was a good thing. The whole thing about the weighing of the heart against the feather is actually an Egyptian underworld judgment ritual.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I think, good to know. We have Daniel's apartment. He has a new apartment, like if you haven't been able to tell.
Yeah, why did he move into a new apartment?
He apparently moved into a different apartment, but Fred Knott is still in Vancouver. If you want to go there, I don't know if it's still there today, but I found it online at least that it used to be the Ash Nola Apartments in 203 East 6th Avenue in Vancouver. So the outside shots, of course, mostly. I don't think the insides.
Right, of course, yeah. But the outside shots. There's a station wagon, I think, parked mm-hmm. in front of the building.
Yeah.
And the resolution was low enough. I couldn't quite tell, but I think it's a Vancouver license plate, not a Colorado license plate.
Yeah. It's that that would not surprise me. Yeah, it's definitely in Vancouver.
And it jumped out to me because they've been so good about showing Colorado license plates through everything that when there was this car that didn't have one, it just really stood out.
There was one thing, I'm blanking on it today because I didn't write it down. Rumor has it, and I could not find any official confirmation for this, but rumor has it that this episode actually came to be because Michael Shanks went to the writers and the producers and said, you know, this whole Cherie thing and Daniel wanting to rescue Cherie and all of that, we've kind of been doing this for a while and it's not gone anywhere and we haven't really done anything. Should we just wrap it up? And that's how this came to be. Like he said, well, I have a quote, like, but rumor has it. How long are we going to do this Cherie thing? It's getting old. That's what he said. It's not confirmed. It's just something I've read.
You know, that's fair because we're what, halfway through season three? And we just periodically hear, oh, by the way, don't forget Daniel's looking for Cherie. And that's basically been the thing through two and a half seasons now.
Yeah, three. We're in three, right? Oh, yeah, two and a half.
Because we're in three.
Yeah. And I mean, there was basically after the beginning, there was this one episode where she was pregnant, and that was it. Somewhere in season two, I want to say. I think
so. Yeah, they needed to wrap this up somehow, or they needed to do more with the story.
Yeah, make progress on it. That was the other option, but I think it was pretty clear that they had abandoned that whole idea. It was more okay, this is why Daniel joined thing, but in reality, and it comes out in this episode, like the reason he's doing it. I didn't buy that it's really just because of her. I think it's just, I mean, we'll get to that. It's him being hurt, basically. That's why he says it. But in reality, yes, it might have been the motivating factor in the beginning, but really, he just liked the new, learning the new things and all of that going out there. Well,
it's a great gig.
Yeah. Oh, it is, I would take it in a heartbeat. Even if I get shot or taken over by Gold after probably 3 seconds.
Yeah, but we but we know that before the end of the episode, they'll save you.
Not everybody got saved. I mean, Kowalski.
Yeah, but he gets to keep coming back.
That's true. He gets to keep coming back. That is true. Yeah, as I said, there's some other stuff I want to mention later, but we'll get to that. Should we just jump in?
Let's do it.
So we are basically on a planet. Doesn't look like the typical BC forest, but it still looks very BC. It's a BC grassland of some sort.
It looks familiar enough.
Yes. It was actually, and that's something, the first thing I wanted to mention, shot with handheld cameras and quick cuts to kind of throw us directly in this chaotic situation.
I liked how they did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, turns out, I wrote down dead Jafar lying around, planking, ? I don't know.
Okay, that's funny.
Came to my mind how they were lying. I'm like, that looks like they're planking.
That is funny.
Turns out SG-1 is there to free the Abydonians. Kasuf somehow sent them a message. How? Never explained.
Huh. I hadn't even thought about that. So yeah,
maybe through the
Dukra. Well, now I am thinking about it.
Yeah. Somehow the Stargate commander learned about it. And we learned that from, I think, Kasuf, that Cherie and Amonet and their boy were or are there too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, were in this in the boys' case, I guess, were there too. Because turns out later we learn some other planet. Sherry comes out of the tent. Daniel kills the guard, like, shoots it. Very bad weapons, like, training that he's gotten. He's not a good shot. He's like holding the gun.
I was waiting for the gun to fall out of his hand after each round that he fired.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, I have zero gun experience in gun training, but I know that's not. I mean, if you're in the military, that's not how. He's a civilian, but he's carrying a gun. He got training for it, so he should know how to do it properly. But he's like,
yeah, he would have to have training if they're going to let him carry live weapons.
It felt almost like he was like holding like a stinking fish in his hand. <It's> like,
yes, I agree. Slimy fish, fire your slimy fish bullets.
Fight going on. There's Gorwold. They're coming from the hillside. They have some big ass weapons. The big ass whatever gun that is, massive staff weapon on a tripod of some sort. I don't know. It's no match for Carter's RPG. Like, she grabs it and shoots it and it explodes. And it's nice.
That was cool.
Yeah. But crap, there's actually more. And there's some losses on the SGC side. I mean, we see that. There's like some people get shot by Gorwold staff weapons. So, of course, not SG-1 because no. But there's some losses.
Because they have contracts.
Because they have contracts. Yes. They have the magic reality bending shield of a contract.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
How fly solid around that armor is.
They just fly around them. They get bent out of the way the shots. Daniel runs into the tent where Shuri went. Jack keeps like, I think there's a scene where they have a MELP thingy, like one of, you know, this little mobile transport thingies. I don't know what to call them.
Yeah, a MALP sounds great.
Yeah, but they have a big ass weapon on top. They mounted a weapon on it.
You know, it probably is just one of the MALP pieces that they made. Yeah,
100%.
And then they just stuck a gun looking thing on it.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe the gun from the SGC set or something. Because, you know, the gate room has some guns with, like, shields front or whatever. Yeah. Or you just stuck that on. Anyway, someone gets shot off that and Jack runs there and jumps on it and keeps firing. So that's pretty cool.
So there was a thing that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm totally willing to admit that I've got stuff in the wrong order. But I thought that they showed Jack and Sam like down undercover shooting.
Yeah, behind like
then Jack's in the at the gun thing, the big gun thing.
Yeah.
And then they show him on the ground again.
I didn't even notice that. But yeah, that probably makes sense. Yeah.
So yeah.
You are pretty exposed on that thing. Yeah, it could be a screw up. I mean, you are pretty exposed on that thing. So that's why the other guy got shot up. On there,
so. Yeah, okay, so maybe he hopped up, shot, and then hopped down. Except I thought it kept I don't know. Anyhow, I need to let it go.
Yeah, I didn't even pay attention to that. I was like, that was not super important because the important part happens in the tent. Daniel comes in and he asks Shuri where the boy is because, you know, Kazuf told them the boy is there. And she says, where you and the system lords will never find him. So she is actually hiding, I mean, which we knew from previous episodes, she is actually hiding the boy from the system lords as well.
Mm-hmm.
How she even figured out that the boy is alive is another question, to be honest. Because if I remember correctly, last time,
from her.
She thought he was dead.
Right, because Daniel told her she was dead. He was dead. You're right.
Yeah. So as far as I can remember. So there's that. Then she brings up the ribbon device And he says, like, he says, don't. But she keeps, just keep, I'm on it, she's a kobold. She just keeps going and raising the hand. And he doesn't, like, he has his gun and he can't shoot her. I understand that. But then, sure. On the other hand, like, I mean, he's about to die, so.
Right, yeah. And he knows it's a kobold.
Yeah, they're not, they have no scruples, right? They're just going to shoot him. Or she, I'm on it, is going to shoot him.
Yeah.
And then we see Tilk running in. In super slow-mo.
Yeah.
And Daniel drops it. No, I can't do that. Daniel drops it, the gun, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's and, the teaser.
Yeah. So we get to the end of the teaser, and I knew what the whole episode was.
Yes. And I mean, to be fair, you told me that earlier, and I thought about that a little bit. You knew the title of the episode. So I think plus the title, Forever in a Day, you can put it together pretty easily. Like, okay, there's going to be basically something going to happen with time where he experiences something in a blink of an instant, basically.
Yes. And so knowing the title before watching the episode, all that did was change by a couple moments when I would know what the episode was. Because they give us the title.
Yeah, they did not keep it forever from us.
Yeah. So, it was not a surprise. The only thing that I didn't know was what's the message going to be?
Interesting. I thought that
but
part
I, but
was
I assumed it was something about the boy.
Well, you were right.
But, you know, I something about the boy. What I mean
about
is
about a boy. What was that? Wasn't that a movie with Hugh Grant or something about a boy?
I think that was a Hugh Grant movie. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's actually a good
but
one.
You know what's the message that we're going to get about the boy? Is it his location? Is it more information about about how he's going to be used? A message
kind
about
of
the boy.
All of the path. So, yeah, I honestly have to say, personally, I found this teaser to be lacking. I mean, yeah, there's plenty of action, but it kind of fails. Not super dangerous or interesting.
What I liked about the teaser opener, I mean, it was an okay opener.
Yeah.
I liked the chaotic part of it. Doing the handheld cameras and I really enjoyed how they did that. The whole side thing with Daniel shooting a fish, a gun, and then Cherie, Amunet.
Yeah,
just kind of hanging out and watching, and then lures him into the tent. And I mean the whole Daniel Amunet thing, it wasn't doing it for me. Mm. And so I enjoyed part of what they were doing with the intro, but it didn't feel like it was all that in a bag of chips.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. There were little aspects, as you said, that were okay or interesting, but mostly it was like, okay. We talked about it last episode, I think. Yeah, we've had stronger teasers. Coming back from the intro, we end up in the infirmary and we see our favorite doctor. So Dr. Fraser is there. Hooray! The team is also there. So I guess the fight ended? Question mark? Daniel's kind of confused.
Daniel didn't die.
He's not dead. Daniel's kind of confused. He's not, I don't know what happened. So Dick tells Daniel that Cherie is dead. Tilk tells him, takes responsibility and says, yeah, I shot her. I had to.
Yeah. Now, I did like that instead of waiting to tell Daniel or waiting for Daniel to find out, as soon as Daniel's told Cherie's dead, Teal immediately steps up and says, yep, it was me.
And also Jack doesn't doesn't wait. Like, you know, you could have been like, oh, let him sleep a little bit and recover, and then we'll tell him. And they're like, nope, like, he has to know now. But Daniel doesn't believe it. He thinks, no. She's a ghoul. They have a sarcophagus. She'll be alive. She's still alive, actually, he says, I think. Like, they just took her somewhere. And then Jack, I think, says, no, there is nobody who could take her.
Yeah, everyone was dead. All the Gould and Jaffa.
Yeah.
Dead.
So Jack takes him to Kazoof, because Jack, I think, thinks, hey, like, maybe Kazoof can convince him that she's dead or something. Daniel actually tells her Shuri will rise again.
And Kazoof is like, wait, what?
He's like, oh, okay. So Jack is like, okay. I guess we're doing this the hard way. Jack takes both of them to the morgue, and we see her body. There's one thing I want to mention here at this point. If you pay attention to the way it is shot and the lighting, you can tell this is not real. It's a very subtle thing that they did here, but they, on purpose, change the lighting and the shooting style slightly from the normal to kind of differentiate. They didn't do anything obvious where it's like, oh, it's all sepia tones or all pink or purple or whatever, or like, or there's like something very obvious in on the screen, like in the sets where it's like, oh, this looks completely different, so this isn't real. But it was subtle things where they, as I said, changed the lighting a little bit, changed the angles that they're shooting people at, stuff like that, just to have a subtle difference. It's a little bit, I think, desaturated, but very lightly.
Now I feel stupid.
Desaturated or oversaturated, I think they did at different points different things, but very lightly.
Okay, so the oversaturated, I definitely caught when they were doing that. And that was like when Shuri was like urgently trying to give him the message while she's dressed as a ghoul and then gets sucked away.
No, that one. No, it was always when Shuri showed up in his imagination, basically, to tell him that something.
Oh.
Like, not the gold part. That was kind of the normal. That it's actually the same, basically the same scene that we've seen before in the beginning. So that is normal. But I think there were two, from what I saw at least, there were two styles. It's basically the normal Shuri is dead style, which was a little bit desaturated, a little bit darker. And the Shuri is alive and talking to me, which is slightly over.
Okay, so my big takeaway from this is that I need to be concerned about color reproduction on my television, because that's something that I should have picked up on.
Yeah,
and
to be fair, it is very subtle. Like, as I said, it was they didn't want to make it too obvious, because they kind of wanted to have that slight surprise that you realize what's going on. But I mean, it gets pretty quickly obvious.
It's very obvious. Now, the different camera angles, I thought that Peter was just trying some interesting things with cameras.
Yeah, which technically did, just for a reason.
Technically he did. And I did not put the reason why he was doing it together.
Yeah.
And... Sometimes I just miss the obvious things.
Yeah, but I think in this case it was not super obvious. Like and it's not supposed to be. It's like, for the people who appreciate it or pay attention to it or see it or we watch it multiple times, they will see it. But it's also not super important, because the story makes it plenty clear that, like, that's what's going on. So you don't need that as a clue.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, yes, you're right.
It was more
obvious what's happening.
Yeah, it was more an artistic decision than a, let's say, plot decision that you had to have that.
Okay, well, go Peter.
Yeah. So, we see a very pale Shuri on a table in the morgue. She's obviously dead. Daniel is very upset with Jack. He's angry. He says, "Why didn't you leave her there? They would have saved her." Oh, this is why we learned it. There was no day. Yeah, we kind of confused that earlier.
Daniel, I blame me.
Yeah, also me, because I also didn't remember. So Jack says, "There's no day left," or "There were no day left," he says. And Tilk adds on, because you know Tilkwiki, "Before victorious mm-hmm. Daniel Jackson, there was no one remaining to take Shari to a sarcophagus. We brought Kazuf to prepare her body according to Abedonian tradition." And that doesn't help.
No.
And Daniel says, "You should have waited longer. I would have gotten through to her." So basically now he's blaming, now that it's like, okay, there was no saving her, he starts blaming Teal'c. It's like, "I would have gotten through to her," basically. And Jack points out, he's like, "She was trying to kill you, Daniel." And he makes a very interesting distinction. He says, "No, she wasn't trying to kill me. Amonet was trying to kill me." At this point, kind of the same.
Dead is dead. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. And Teal'c points it out. He's like, "I've seen many humans killed by World Rim devices. You would have been dead in mere seconds had I not acted." And Jack confirms that. Daniel did the right thing, Daniel. And Teal'c takes responsibility. He's like, "I'm sorry, Shari is dead. However, you are my friend. If I had to do it again, I would do the same thing." Well, I would do the same. He's right. He did. He's absolutely right. I mean, I'm sure if Teal'c had seen a chance to do anything else, he would have. But in this situation, the best thing he could do was kill her.
Yep.
And with that, he just walks out. That's it. Like, he walks out.
Mm-hmm.
So the rest of the team stays still in the morgue. He's like, "Mic drop, leave." But he also knows, I think, that him being there is not gonna do them any good at this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Daniel needs time.
That makes sense.
To kind of work through his things. So we go back to his hospital room, because he's still in the infirmary, basically.
Yeah.
Carter comes in, and I really love this scene. It's a really nice scene. Carter brought the chocolate walnut cookies that he loves. So.
Yeah, it was a very sweet scene.
Yeah.
You could really feel that Carter cares for Daniel.
Oh yeah, she does.
And she feels really bad for him. I mean,
mm-hmm.
any potential to recover his wife,
mm-hmm.
that's gone now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Daniel's in a very, very interesting mood. He has like a pen, and he's contemplating the pen. Which confuses Carter, of course. And he says, "I spent half my life studying the written word, including how various cultures recorded things through the ages, from hammer and chisels to squills and ink. But I never stopped once to recognize the ingenuity of this simple little piece of technology that we use. After the first team left me on Abydos, Shari saw me writing in my journal and thought the ballpoint I was using was magic. I couldn't save her. All those wonders we have at our disposal, and I couldn't save her." So he's kind of blaming himself as well a little bit.
Yes, which makes sense. That's a normal reaction. Okay, the thing about his little monologue about mm-hmm. the pen, I loved it
mm-hmm.
for the wrong reason.
Okay.
I loved it because I have taken for granted my entire life the technology of a simple ballpoint pen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just taken it for granted. It is mm-hmm. just a thing.
Yeah, it is. That's so true.
And then Daniel's description, it's like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. Every pen I use is actually a marvel.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the point where Carter like barely can hold back tears. Like she knew Amonette, and she knew how much Cherie meant to mm-hmm. Daniel. Right, and Carter is close to everybody. So it was a really nice scene. Like you can tell, like she, and that was really well played. Like she's really holding back the tears at this point.
Yeah, Amanda Tapping. Yeah, she was great in this scene.
Yes. So Daniel kind of sends her away. Like he's like, I want to get some sleep. And she gets up and she says, let me know if you need anything, okay? And again, like close to tears, like her voice is breaking a little bit in this. Like, but Daniel just says, thank you. It's like, doesn't want to deal with anything.
Yeah. So she leaves
and something happens. Daniel closes his eyes and then we see a bright light. And all of a sudden, we see Amonette, in this case, I mean Amonette, like full on what we saw her on the planet, full on gold gear, gold mm-hmm. regalia, I don't know what to call it.
mm-hmm.
And she's still holding the ribbon device, like towards Daniel, and we hear her voice kind of in a, I don't know, wispy way, almost. She says, mm-hmm. like with a lot of echo, reverb, all of that, she says, hear me, Daniel.
And if we didn't understand what they were doing with the episode yet,
yeah,
you would absolutely know in this moment.
Yeah. Now it's like, okay, yes, something, I mean, either it's a flashback to something that happened, or I mean, given the title, we are in that situation. We are in that trapped in that second or couple seconds between alive and dead. One of them. So. Yeah, and Daniel wakes up from that. And all of a sudden, Amonette is sitting next to her next to the hospital bed. And he's completely confused. She is there. And Fraser is there, and I think, was it Hammond is there? Or Tilk is there? I don't remember. There's like a couple of people there, at least.
It's funny. I only remember Doc Fraser as the extra person there.
Maybe it was only her. I don't remember. So she asks him about Daniel's date of birth. We learn it is July 8th. Doesn't say which year. It's just July 8th. And someone tells him that Tilk shot Amonette, but then they took her to the Tok'ra. I think wasn't that Carter that said that. Basically, they took her to the Tok'ra, and the Tok'ra were able to Carter and Tilk were there.
Okay.
Yeah, because Carter says, yeah, we took you to the Tok'ra, and they had a captured sarcophagus and a way to remove the gold. So that's interesting. Completely different story.
If you don't get what's going on mm-hmm. with the episode, mm-hmm. this would be like very disorienting.
I think is
the intent.
That's absolutely the intent, because you're like, is she dead? Is she not? There's two completely different, like starting from the same starting point, two completely different stories. So either one of them is not true or both of them aren't true, but something is going on. Like they're contradictory, right?
They are. But then we get a little bit of information from Cherie.
Yes.
That just reinforces this is not reality right now.
No. Very clearly, at least one of them, or the one that we're in right now, is not reality. Because I think the team leaves and Cherie stays behind and she says, Daniel, I only came to tell you about the boy. And then he says, what about him? But before she can say anything, she kind of gets sucked away, I called it. Like time warp, sucked away, something like
that. Yeah, I like that description.
Yes. So in this case, as I said, very clearly, okay, that one is not real. Or something really strange is going on. I mean, we've seen strange things, so who knows. But I would say, I think relatively clear, not real. And then he wakes up again. And Shuri is dead again.
So his inception thing is not getting working. more convoluted.
So we know at least it feels like the one where she's dead and she's alive are not, they're definitely not real. So because he now came back, it was very brief, and he came back basically. He fell asleep and then he saw all of that and then he's back and wakes up and she's dead again. So I think the implication is at least the one where she's alive is not real.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
So Daniel goes to Hammond's office. Because he wants to resign. Which Hammond doesn't want to accept.
I love the way when Daniel is like handing him his resignation letter.
Yeah.
Hammond's just like, I won't accept this.
Yeah, and Daniel says, well, I'm not military, sir. It's a free country. Last I checked, anyway.
plays different now than it did in the late 90s.
Oh, yes. And Hammond says, you're obviously in an emotional state right now. You're making rash decisions. Why don't you take some personal time? You know, that's always the answer. Take some personal time and then see how you feel. Take some vacation days, right? But Daniel's like, nope, that's not necessary, sir. I joined this program so that I could find my wife. I found her. End of story. And with that, he just walks out. He's like, nope, done.
Yeah, and I had a problem with that line, as we were alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
I do not buy that he joined the program just so he could find his wife. That was definitely a motivating factor, but there was a lot more going on for him that led to that decision.
To be fair, I think he kind of joined the program way before that, because that's how he even met her.
Right.
He wouldn't have met, I mean, the program as in SGC didn't in that shape exist in the beginning, but, and SG-1 wasn't a team kind of was and kind of wasn't like that before, but, the whole thing and his obsession with aliens and pyramids and all of that predates Shuri.
Right. Yes, and if you go back to the movie, he's even in lectures proposing the idea that pyramids are landing platforms for alien spacecraft.
He did. I think we had even a couple episodes when they were on Earth where that, I think the whole, like, I don't remember, there were a couple episodes where that even came up already, that people were, like, kind of making fun of him because of that and all that. It's very clear this is a reaction out of hurt, and he wants to kind of get away from the Stargate program and from the people there because he kind of feels hurt. He's grieving,
which makes sense. Understandable.
Yeah, and that's why he's making this rash decision. I think that's a lot of people do stuff like that where they're like rashly breaking up with people or whatever because they're just hurt and they just want to get away from everything.
Yeah.
Everything that would connect them to the loss, basically.
Yeah. So then he leaves and we get to see his apparently new apartment.
No, not yet. We go to his office first.
Of course we do. I forgot. Yeah.
We're a little bit away. So Daniel's packing in his office and there's like some military personnel around, shuffling around boxes, I guess. And Jack comes in and he's like, you should meet the whiz kid they saddled us with while you were out of commission.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah. And Daniel says, yeah, it's Robert Rothman. He was my research assistant when I was doing my dissertation. Smart guy. Had a good teacher.
Which is very funny.
It's him, right?
Yes.
Jack does not believe the whole Daniel's quitting thing. Like, he wants to know when Daniel will be back because, like, yeah, it's like you can't stay away, basically. He says, like, give it a week, you'll miss me. Also funny, typical Jack.
Yep.
And Daniel says, yes, all the salty, bad-tempered insults, the illogical arguments, all that. He just picked out the negative sides. I think he would miss Jack as well. I think Jack is right here. He knows people. And then Jack says, okay, you'll miss Carter and Teal. And Daniel very quietly says, I'll miss Carter. because remember, he blames Teal'c.
Right.
Yeah. So. So Jack, like, Jack tries to convince him still, and Daniel, like, shuts it down. He's like, Jack, up until now, every time I set foot through the gate, I was thinking about my wife. Maybe I'll see her this time. Maybe this is the one. Now, every time I go through, it just be some place where that hope used to be. And Jack doesn't really have an answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than quoting Daniel to himself. Because he says, the SGC may be the single most important human endeavor for the future of mankind. Not bad, huh? You said that.
Excellent comeback, Jack.
Yeah, and I think I don't remember when he said that. Was that in a movie or was that at the end of season one when they were trying to defend the program against Senator Kinsey?
Probably, I don't know, but feels very, it feels very season one to me.
That's what I thought as well, but I wasn't 100% sure, like, where he said. But as I said, but as I said, even that does not convince Daniel at all.
But here's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Daniel is at this point talking about how Jack bags on him for mm-hmm. being so smart, in essence.
Yes.
Jack quotes Daniel to mm-hmm. Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Jack's letting him know, hey, I see you and I pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Daniel shuts it down. He's like, the SGC will go on without me. He's probably right, but probably not as successfully. I mean, he freaking figured out a bunch of very important things.
Mm-hmm.
He saved Earth with the rest of SG-1 multiple times at this point, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, no, he's not just a person. Yes, everybody is in a way replaceable, and yes, the program will probably go on without him, and yes, they might even be fine, but that's not a reason to quit.
No.
Yeah. So we go out. Not. So we go out to, like, out in the corridor. He's heading out. He's like, I'm done. There's Teal'c. Teal'c is standing in the way. He's not letting him go on the elevator. Daniel's very angry with him. And Teal'c mm-hmm. says, is there not some form of human ritual in which I may ask your forgiveness? And Daniel just says, no, and walks past him. No explanation, no, not yet, no, whatever, or yes, there could be something. Just no.
That was pretty harsh.
Yeah. Like, basically, I mean, nothing you can do will change this, basically. That's the thinking. Now we go to Daniel's apartment.
Okay. The apartment where a car from Vancouver is parked out front, yes. Even though it's supposed to be Colorado Springs. That apartment. The apartment where he's moving to, even though he was already living in an apartment.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That apartment.
You know, back in the time when he died or something. Supposedly. Yep,
right.
Jack and Carter are there to help him move.
No Teal'c.
No Teal'c, of course not. But it's a very, I don't want to say contentious situation, but it's definitely, I mean, they're helping, but I don't think Daniel wants him to.
He kind of wants, and he kind of doesn't,
I think.
Yeah, the impression I got was that he's ready to say goodbye. He wants to be left alone.
Yeah, and I mean, he's running away. Because I think Jack asked him, like, what's next? He says, well, hopefully I'm going somewhere far away, the most remote dig I can find. So he's 100% running away.
Mm-hmm.
From everything.
So the funny thing for me with that line
mm-hmm.
is that he's been to locations all around the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah. So that's further away than anything.
So where's he going to go that's remote now, since he doesn't have Stargate access?
Yeah, on Earth. It's like, that's not a lot.
Yeah, there's nothing remote in comparison.
No. Carter asks him, like, whether she will see him again. And he says, at the funeral. Not really an answer.
No. And
more like a cop-out.
Yeah.
And then he kind of throws them out. He's like, if you'll excuse me, I seem to have a lot to do. That was rude.
But Jack hugs him.
Yeah. No, but we get a really nice scene. So first Carter hugs Daniel. It's a very, very close hug. Like, they're friends. And she, as mm-hmm. I said, again, close to tears. And Jack's situation starts really weird and awkward. Because he's kind of like slapping his hand a little bit. It's like, oh, it's been a pleasure doing business with you, he says.
Which is so weird, but
which is okay. Really weird, but then they do hug. And Daniel doesn't throw it, like, push him away or anything. So I think there's more. He doesn't really want to go. He doesn't really want to get separated from his friends, but he kind of is hurt. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. They go. And we switch to Knight. He's in his bed. He's asleep.
So I want to point out, mm-hmm. Daniel must be very efficient at putting everything away, because his bedroom is completely finished.
Yeah, I mean, you remember when they were in his apartment, there was at least one or two other, like, military personnel with him. So I guess there was a mover, like a troop of movers putting everything in the right place. Or is he moving out of the apartment? I don't remember, actually. Is he moving in or is he moving out?
He's moving in, because that's the same apartment that Jack and Goodfather meet him.
That's true. And it's yeah.
So isn't that funny? I can remember Goodfather, but Kasuf. I forget his name. K something.
Kasuf. Yes. Gesundheit. Gesundheit. Let's call him that. Yes. Yeah. So but he's in his bed and he wakes up, and he sees Shuri/Amonet again. Like, and again, the hear me, Daniel. I want to point mm-hmm. out something, and I think that's what you probably picked up. The scenes between Shuri, Amonet, and Daniel were shot also in a very special way. Because they were shot very close up and with, like, very mm-hmm. soft lighting. I think you probably picked up.
Yeah.
That's what you probably picked up earlier. Like, I just want to point that out.
Okay. So I was right on something.
Yes.
I'll take it.
Yes.
I mean, it was obvious enough that even with what I'm realizing is a TV that probably needs to be replaced,
probably.
I could still see it.
Yes. Well, no, you could say you're watching it with realistic, like, you have a realistic TV watching experience for Stargate, because since it was a 90s show.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Compared to me, it was watching
this show
it
for 10 years.
Yes.
Which means, technically, had I been into Stargate SG-1, I could have watched it during first run on the television that I'm using. it's been so good, I can't get rid of it.
No, that's totally valid. Yeah, anyway, he wakes up in his bed. And if you couldn't tell, the lighting is slightly different. And Shuri's next to him.
Yeah, and the angle is much, the camera angle, they bring it down low when they're together. It's like...
Yeah. Yeah, very like, close.
It feels more personal. Yes. Yeah, it's much closer.
And she says, she basically like patches him and tells him, like, very, like, kind of very, like, kindly, like, it's like, go back to sleep. Tomorrow you will rise and return to your travels through the Chapai. That's what she says. And Daniel does not want that. He's like, I don't need to anymore. I've already found you. You know, the alternative version.
Right.
Yeah. But Shuri is like, no, you must continue. You can find the boy. And Daniel's like, okay, where is he? Right? We remember we wanted to ask that question before she disappeared. But this time she doesn't try to give him an answer. She gives him a different answer. Because she tells him to continue your troubles. You must first forgive Tilk. He did what is right. That is important.
Yep.
Yeah. And then they go back to sleep and he wakes up again at night alone. Because of course, that was, we know by now that was not real. But it has a real message, which I think is the point.
Yes. I mean, yeah, she has clearly two messages for Daniel.
Yeah.
And we know them both now.
Yeah.
Forgive. Find the boy
and
forgive Tilk.
Forgive Tilk because it's not his fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is interesting because, I mean, we know later that she's not even dead at this point. But she knows she's going to be within
a second. She knows what's coming.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no other way. So we go to Abydos. There's this funeral. It's really nicely set. Like there's a grave in the desert, basically. I'm wondering where they shot that. Like some sand pit somewhere, as usual, probably.
Well, wasn't there a location near one of like the loading shipping areas?
Something
where
there was
a bunch of sand.
Yeah, I think that's probably where they had it, or some whatever quarry somewhere there was a lot of sand. I don't know, but yeah, it was probably the same location. Anyway, it's really in the set, nicely set. Kasuf is there. He starts saying something in, I guess, Abydonian. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And then Daniel steps up. Talks to a little golden figurine, supposedly some deity, I assume. And he says, and I wrote that down because it's a really interesting, and this is the scale thing, what it was called, the trial of the great scales, that's what it's called, this Egyptian thing. He says, I speak for Shari, who can no longer speak for herself. I have spoken no lies, nor acted with deceit. I was once possessed by a demon who did these things against my will. The demon is gone, and now I am without sin. Grant me a place in your blessed dwelling. If my heart weighs more than a feather, my soul still contains sin. If not, may my soul join the god. And then he puts the feather on the scale. It stays, of course. And it says, by the trial of the great scales, thy heart is light, thy soul has been found true. Which then concludes the ceremony.
Right. And
really nice. I really like this.
Yeah, I thought it was done really well.
Yeah.
I could elaborate, but that's it. That's all.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. So then let's move on. Kasuf stays with Daniel, and he's concerned because you have still not heard her. That's what he says.
And Daniel's like, what?
Yeah. And he's like, what she has to say is important to all of our future. Go to her. And he's like, and I think he tells him to go somewhere.
Yeah. It points to the tent that's off to the side.
Yeah. So he goes around the tent, up to the side of the tent, and turns out Shari is there. That they just buried. Weird. You know, it's another dream. So lighting change. And she this time she's very obvious now. She tells him, you must forgive Tilk, and together you must find the boy. And I think Kasuf joins, as far as I remember. And he explains it. He says, for he is Harsesis, the one who holds the secrets. And Shari explains, the boy is the son of two Gua'uld hosts. He contains all the secrets of the Gua'uld. You must find him.
So now we've got the whole thing figured out.
Yes.
Now we know her message.
Yes, that is the message. And we get another flash of Amonette. And again, she says, hear me, Daniel. So the flashback to real world, what we know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it's real world. we briefly flash back to Daniel's apartment. I kind of wondered about this because they were on Abydos. And as far as I know, Carter was there.
Carter was there. Jack was there.
Yeah.
Doc Fraser was there.
Yeah. So, but the next scene is in his apartment, he calls someone and says he needs to talk to Carter. I'm like, didn't it just come back from planet? Couldn't they just talk there?
Yeah.
I guess it took him a while to figure that out. It's the only explanation I have. Took him a while to take it seriously, I guess.
Well, or we could hand wave it away as he's not in his reality.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So it's kind of wibbly wobbly.
It can be very disjointed.
Yeah, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, all of that, right? Could be. Yeah, so.
I think the reality is they needed to just make it clear that Daniel had an epiphany and needs to talk to Sam.
Yeah, pretty much. So we go back to SGC. When we see Teal'c in his place, and he is, I called it Kelnorimming.
Yeah. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. And Daniel comes in and he's ready to talk to Teal'c, which I think is a great sign. Mm-hmm. And he says, before they can resolve anything, at least he's talking, and I think Daniel mentions it at the end that he's happy that he's once again coming to him for information. So we get Teal'c Wiki, right? Because we need Teal'c Wiki.
Yeah, it's Teal'c that says he's glad.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Like Teal'c says that at the end.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but we need Teal'c Wiki first.
Okay.
So Daniel asks, Teal'c, what happens if two golden hosts have a child? And Teal'c says, it is strictly forbidden, punishable by death. For Gould. That is pretty harsh.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is, if two hosts were to mate and produce a child, that child would contain all the knowledge of the Gould. Interesting. So the genetic memory that Gould have in their DNA is passed on to the human offspring. That's what Daniel asks, and Teal'c says, that is correct. Such children are called Harseuses. These children are hunted down and destroyed by the Gould with great impunity. Yeah, of course, because knowledge is power. And having a puny human running around
with all of that intel, yeah.
Not a good thing. So we go to Hammond's office. And we get a funny scene. Because Jack is complaining to the general. He's like, General, the guy's got two left feet. I'm telling you, he slows down the humans. Unit.
And so we've already had a scene where we got to see this guy.
Yeah. With the team. In the beginning when they came back through the gate, basically. Yes, we had that.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah. We had that. Yes, yeah, we had that, I think. At least I think so. And Daniel comes in and he's like, deja vu, you know, Rossman was a two-time decathlon champion in college. So about the
deja vu feet. Joke is funny.
Yes, because they say, I think it goes back and forth, even like Daniel says deja vu, Jack says deja vu, Daniel says deja vu, Jack says deja vu, and then Daniel says it again.
Yep.
So that is really funny. So Daniel kind of surmises that Jack is trying to get Robert out of the unit.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack says, well, yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny and very Jack.
Yeah. And I'm actually kind of thinking, where did they come back? I don't remember that, but I don't remember when that happened.
I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter because there's enough disjointed in here. And,
it's all over the place.
Yeah.
So anyway, Daniel is like, any chance of that happening, sir? So to Hammond. and Hammond is like, yeah, the only chance would be if you can reconsider. And Daniel says, okay. Which then I think Jack gets it. He's like, ah, okay, yeah, he wants, okay, he's in. He reconsidered. So they agree. They're like, okay. I think Hammond says, well, I didn't anyway. I didn't file your paperwork yet. So technically you're not out. So you're in.
So there you go.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Yeah. Very convenient.
Yeah. So we go to the gate room. and Rothman is there. And O'Neill says to him, so Bruce Jenner, sit this one out, huh?
Yeah, which was funny.
That was funny. And Rothman is kind of like, me? Why? And O'Neill's like, oh, you've been reassigned to another unit. And he's again, why? And, well, okay, you're being replaced. Why? So you're getting, like, he's a little bit slow and annoying. And then Jack says something, and that was, I think earlier someone had told Rothman that the only reason why Jack didn't like him was because he was intimidated by his intelligence.
Oh, yes. I remember Daniel saying that now.
Yeah, yep. But I think we skipped over that scene. I don't remember where that happened, because it came, there was a scene where they came back. But I don't remember where. Maybe I just skipped over it because it was super.
Not yes, important. I remember it too. Okay, so now my confusion about some of the stuff that's been happening in this interaction is making sense to me, because you're right. We skipped over a scene
somewhere. I don't remember. I guess in my notes. I guess I just skipped over that somehow. That's it. It apparently was not super important. So yeah, I can't even find it. There was something I remember that Jack told Hammond, oh, we gotta talk, something like that.
Yeah, there was the whole thing about Daniel's being replaced, who's gonna replace him. They introduce the guy, Daniel tells us he's really smart, and and I can't tell you when that happened, other than somewhere it was earlier than this scene.
Yeah, as I said, apparently it was not super important, because I don't even remember. I don't even see it. Oh, no, there it is. Yeah, we did skip over it. We should go back to that, because we skipped over quite a lot. Because that happens between Daniel needs to talk to Carter and the Teal'c thing, the cannery-ming. And that's why I skipped over it. I found it. It was right before this, basically. So we're in SGC. SG-1 is back. Daniel is there because he needs to talk to Carter. And Jack and Hammond is there, and Rothman is there. And Jack says, General, I need to. And he glances at Rothman and said, talk to you alone.
Okay, so... Yes. In my defense, I am totally on brand, because the conversation between Daniel and Sam that's in this scene, I thought was in the scene we were just discussing and was about to come up.
Yeah, exactly.
And yes, I've got it totally wrong.
It was me, because I thought that we skipped right to the whole other thing, but no. So
to say it's my fault.
Yeah, no, it's
because it usually is.
Because I mean, of course, he said he wants to talk to Carter, but he never did. So that's where I skipped it. So Daniel tells Teal'c. Teal'c is still there, of course, still standing there. Mm-hmm. So only Jack and Hammond left. But this is important, because Daniel tells Teal'c finally that he did the right thing, right? Because that's the thing that Terry wanted him to do. Daniel has a question for Carter. He wants to understand something about the ribbon device. Like, how does it work? And Carter says, well, the best I can tell, it uses a modified version of the power source from a staff weapon, which it channels through the amplification crystals. And Daniel's like, no, I meant it works by thought control, right? And she's like, yeah, that's one way of putting it. More like thought control amplified with emotion. Because that's her experience with it. She's like, she struggled with it. And Dennis says, yeah, so there's a connection with the mind. And she says, yeah, definitely. And Daniel's like, so it's possible to send a thought through it if you had someone, if you had someone in one of those groups like Shari had me in. I know this may sound like wishful thinking, but I think Shari was trying to send a message to me through the hand device. And Carter says, yeah, that is probably possible. What that message is, he's not sure yet. Even though he's heard it, very obviously. But I guess he doesn't want to fully accept it yet.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, was he not sure what the message really meant? Or did he not want to tell anyone yet?
Probably a little bit column A, a little bit column B. Yeah. And then we get the scene that we also remembered and then skipped over, which is Daniel's apartment again with Kazoof.
Where Jack breaks the lock so they can get in and wait for Daniel.
So Daniel and Kazoof are in there, and Jack and Kazoof are there. Daniel comes in and is kind of surprised, like, how did you get in here? And Jack eventually is like, I got sick of waiting in the hall, so I let us in. You need a new lock, by the way. Oh, Jack.
And that's Jack.
And the reason for it is that Kazoof has heard that Daniel wants to stop doing it, like stop going through the guard. But he says, Kazoof says, Shari wishes him to travel among the gods.
Mm-hmm.
How does he know?
Well, she's in the other room. Just go tell her.
He's like, talk to her. Go ask her. She told me. So Kazoof and Daniel walk through a door, and all of a sudden Daniel's alone back on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely dream within a dream now. So both, I think at this, I mean, if it wasn't clear before, this is the point where it's like, okay, I think none of the realities are real.
Right.
Shari is there, and Daniel walks again in the tent, and we get the same flashback, but the message has changed. She says, come to me, Daniel.
Huh. I don't remember her saying that.
Yeah, I noticed that. At least I hope that's what happened.
Oh, I'm sure that's exactly what happened. But I can't keep anything in this episode straight anyhow, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyway, so that's, it says, I looked up in the transcript, like, she's again in tent, and this time she says, come to me, Daniel. And then he wakes up in his apartment and rushes out, like, so he, I think, and that is the point when he finally starts to believe the message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he goes to Teal'c and asks about the information he got from Shari. I mean, he now has the information that, yes, it is possible to transfer messages through the hand device. And he got information about their boy. So he wants to confirm it, and that's when he goes to Teal'c. And then we get the whole thing with Hyman's office and Daniel being back in. So now that also kind of more makes sense. So we go to, and then we have this whole thing that Jack is intimidated by Rossman's intelligence, and that's why he doesn't want him there.
And Jack's, what I enjoy about that is that it makes a nice bookend joke, because mm-hmm. when we're introduced to Rothman, Daniel tells him that Jack is intimidated by his intelligence.
Yeah, we got that in the gate room, basically, in that gate room scene, I think.
Yeah, now we get Jack just going, because I'm intimidated by your intelligence.
Yeah, so Jack knows.
What's the mystery here?
Jack knows. I mean, Daniel told him that, and because that was going on. But I think the assumption was Jack doesn't know that. But Jack is smart enough, and good leader, and he's like, he absolutely knows why that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So, the gate dials, and now the reconstituted SG-1 steps through to a somewhat purple-looking BC forest.
Yeah.
nice effect, I have to say.
So finally, the forest does look different.
Yeah.
And and Jack's like, go collect samples.
Yeah.
Find life signs. Things. There's no big ones. Find little things.
Find little things, yeah. So sounds really boring. Which Daniel takes then to, and you know, remember the whole come to me Daniel thing?
Mm-hmm.
Daniel dials a gate and runs through.
And everyone's like, without what the hell? Team.
And then what the hell? And I think Carter tries to grab the address he went to.
But it's gone too fast.
It's gone too fast, so she couldn't. So we go back to the planet. And of course, I'm on it is there.
Mm-hmm.
And we get kind of the conclusion of everything. So now it's time for Amunet or Chari to tell what's going on. So she explains, Amunet took the Abaddonians as a show so that her Ur would not know her true goal. Because her true goal was that she wanted to send the boy into hiding with her closest aide. So it's kind of a distraction. Right?
She knew
that the boy was still alive and that it was hiding amongst the Abaddonians. So she took all of them, pretended that was the goal to just take them, her former family, basically. Mm-hmm. And in reality, all she wanted was the boy that she could hide it somewhere.
So very clever, tricksy little Gould.
Yeah. And she's about to tell him why and what's going on and where is all of that. And she almost gets sucked away again, like we saw before. Like mm-hmm. sucked through the vortex.
Yeah.
Traveling to another parallel dimension. I don't know. But she kind of manages to this time not get sucked away. I think the implication is that that's the Gould kind of interfering and trying to prevent her from doing the thing she wants to do.
Yeah. Yes, I'm with you. That's my interpretation as well.
Yeah. And finally, we get the address. Or get the, not the address, but the location. Because she said, Daniel says where, and she says Cape. And Daniel's like, you know, I know Cape, because we need Daniel the key now.
Right.
It's all in his dream. So we Daniel the key and Teal'c is on another planet, even in his dreams. Not that he could just imagine him being there all of a sudden, but he's like, oh, Cape, that's a reference. It's a mythical place where Osiris hid from Seth. We know those two.
Yeah. Old friends.
Yeah. And he says, Cape is a myth. And Shuri says, no.
Now, you see, at this point, he should know better than to say, oh, that place is a myth. How many times over the course of all these seasons have we seen myths be reality?
Yes. And I think Shuri asks him, promise me, Daniel, that you will save our child. And he does. I think he's accepted the message. He's accepted the responsibility. He's accepted the challenge as well. And they do kiss. And that's kind of the end, because we flash back to reality and to the ribbon device. And we see how Daniel's gun drops and Teal'c shoots and kills her. There was one little problem I had with this scene.
I am so up for hearing the problem.
So there's a Gould in Shuri, and she's dying. And Daniel lies super close to her.
Oh my god, how did they not pick up on this? Super concerned
that Amunet just says, oh, nice, new body. And it's one of the Stargate team, so perfect.
It would be perfect. Oh my god, why did I not see that? I picked the most ridiculous things to have issues with this in this episode, and I should have been completely annoyed with this.
Yeah, I can hand wave it away by saying, well, I mean, Teal'c is a Jaffa, and he knows where to shoot someone that the Gould basically gets killed.
Yeah, okay, sure. It's okay.
Yeah, so maybe it's fine. And anyway, Daniel lies down close to Shuri, and Shuri, like, with her dying breath, says, "I love you, Daniel." And Daniel, I think, turns to Teal'c and says, "You did the right thing, Teal'c." And the rest of SG-1 came in, the rest of SG-1 comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing we see is Daniel saying to Shuri, "I love you too." In a very heartbreaking final moment. And that is also the final moment of this episode.
Yeah, the end.
The end.
So, okay, clearly there's some issues with the flow, because even between the two of us, we skipped over a big chunk of the episode. And then when we finally realized it, anyhow.
I think it was more that I struggled with my own notes, I guess. Somehow I got turned around. I scrolled probably a little bit too far.
You'd think that I would have picked up on it earlier. But yeah.
Yeah, it only came up when we were missing the part that connected things. Yeah, anyway, what are your thoughts? Like, good episode, bad episode, like... Is it interesting, or was it interesting to watch, or were you like, okay?
It was an okay episode. I enjoyed watching it,
mm-hmm.
and I liked what they were trying to do with the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that there would have been more mystery about what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they have 50 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever. Yeah,
44 or something like that, I think.
Yeah. To tell this whole story. Mm-hmm. So you got to be moving fast, fast, fast.
Yeah. And with a complex episode like that, where it's like three different time frames, basically, or two.
Yeah, they're totally doing time frame, Inception.
One real time frame and two, like, dreams, basically. Dream within a dream, even. So, yeah.
Yeah, and then we get to the end and we find out that it was the entire thing was a few seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, at most a couple seconds, yeah.
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 I would have liked to have seen a different, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I'd have to think about it. But a different storyline for Shuri and Aminet,
mm-hmm.
Like maybe Aminet becomes a major system lord, and now you have this this thing where ultimately it becomes the big thing about can Daniel do what needs to be done in that moment?
Yeah, she takes over Apophis' empire and grows into like a gold queen, something like that.
Yeah, yes. I mean that could have been really interesting,
mm-hmm.
But. It was clear that they weren't invested in the whole Shuri storyline.
Yeah, but I mean...
So it needed to wrap up.
Not recently, but like basically more or less from the beginning. They were barely invested in the beginning, and then after that, they just mostly dropped it. So
yeah, it needed to wrap up.
Yes.
And doing it in this way was... that worked.
Yeah, I agree.
And they did give us a setup for another storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel's quest has now shifted from forgetting about Shuri to forgetting about the boy.
Yeah, you're right. Forgetting about, yes.
So I think that we'll have at most two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
That directly relate to the boy, and they may very likely address that as a single episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's some stuff that I'm like, okay. I honestly like the way it is. Like, I like the way they wrapped up her story. It's not like, oh, they're she accidentally gets killed or anything like that. Or they free her and she's never seen again. You know, could also happen. She moves away and doesn't want anything to do with Daniel. Like, there's so many bad ways they could have wrapped this up. Her basically, in an act of defiance of her Goa'uld, telling Daniel the key pieces of information that I think Amonette didn't want out there. In with her dying breath, basically, more or less. Or close to it, at least. Is pretty well done, and also really well done on the acting side, like her how she like acted the kind of two different characters that she is, right? She's Amonette the Goa'uld, and she is Dream Shari.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought about it too much. I didn't think a lot about this episode. Mm-hmm. It's like I enjoyed it, but it wasn't episode.
It's not super deep, and you're like, oh, it's like important to anything like it. But
I like what you said about how they wrapped up Cherie's story, and so now that you pointed it out, it's like I get it. Her story ends with her being strong and defiant. Yeah. She wins.
She dies, but
she wins.
Yeah. I mean, I think that she died. I think she kind of... on one hand, I think she wanted that. On the other hand, I think she assumed that would happen one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So that was her way of basically going out with a bang, right? To say, well, I'm dying, but at least I'm going to mess up your evil plans.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly. We'll see if that happens, but at least there's a good chance. And she did it with her husband.
Yeah, so we got a Daniel Cherie team up to beat the Goa'uld in one of their plots. And
So that's the whole thing. So yeah, it's like I said, it's an entertaining episode. I don't care too much about the whole dream within a dream thing. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? Yeah. I like a lot of the acting for change. Actually, for change, Daniel is actually doing something and is acting also. So
that Michael was a Shanks, pleasant change.
Michael Shanks for change gets to act in a somewhat normal capacity and not just be a doofus. Or useless, or not important for the storyline. So that's good.
So, okay. So here's what I have seen. Here's my perception on Daniel and the stories.
Yeah.
He is almost an extra, unless it's a Daniel story. And there's not hardly really any in between where it's like, he's part of a strong ensemble. I mean, he is, but
And
it's like he's the afterthought in the strong ensemble.
Yeah. And I mean, you probably noticed that this season we're getting more Daniel episodes. And there's a reason for that, because he's pushing for it. He wants to do more.
Good for him.
He wants to do more and wants his story to evolve more and his character to evolve more. Michael Shanks wants. So that he's pushing for it.
And good for him.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be very easy to just
do your thing.
Just do your thing and ride the gravy train because he knows he has, well, at this point we know that there, know how many more seasons
Four contracted. So they have at least another season and a half. So they're more than halfway through. So also keep that in mind. So for season three, that's the second half of the season. So you're past the uh-oh point where it's like, we only have two more seasons.
Yeah. So, you know, you could just write it out.
Yeah.
And because at this point, there's no guarantee there will be more seasons.
Yes.
Or you can push and say, let's do some interesting things with my character.
Yeah. And they do. So. And some work and some don't, but But he gets to try things.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, given what we just discussed, how many chevrons would you give this?
I've been having a difficult time with this one. And even with everything that that I think they executed well in this episode, I think it's still a 5 for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this time I'm not going to disagree or trying to convince you anything else, because I agree with you. I was thinking about it. Is it 6? It's definitely not beyond a 6. Like that was
very... No, definitely not.
Very
few. And I was torn, 5 or 6.
Yeah, me too. But I'm with you on that one. I'm like, there's some nice things that they do, and like some good choices on the creative side. It's just, let's call it average. It's the best thing I can come up with. It's an average.
It's an average episode. Yeah. And that's actually disappointing.
Yes.
Because coming into this with Jonathan Glassner writing and Peter DeLuise directing.
Yeah, I mean, Peter DeLuise did a good job. It's just the story was not super interesting.
Yeah. I think this would have been a actually disappointing episode if Peter DeLuise hadn't been directing it.
Yeah.
But with those two names together, I was expecting more than we got.
Yeah. But I mean, who knows? Like, how fast did they have to write this, and how much like budget they have and all of that? Like, you never
know.
And what got cut, that's true. Yeah. You know what's not getting cut? I hope at least the next episode of this.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
We have another story by Tor Alexander Valenza, directed by William Garrethy. We know both of those names quite well already.
Okay.
And it is past and present. Past and present. I'll give you one little hint. Someone from the past will return. Someone we've seen, some character we've seen in the past will return. That's all I'm telling
it's
you.
Funny. And in all honesty, that's where I was going with this.
Okay, good. Then I didn't spoil it.
And you didn't. And the reason I was thinking, okay, this involves someone, some character we've encountered before.
Yeah.
As opposed to time travel.
Yeah.
We've done our time travel episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it went really, really well.
Yes.
And I just don't think that, even though they could do another time travel episode, because they've set everything up so that they could plan a time travel thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they're doing it right now.
Yeah. I'll tell you two more things, because they're not spoilers.
Okay.
The German title is not a spoiler. It's Vergangenheit und Gegenwart, past and present.
Okay.
But the French is. So I'm not telling you what the French is. The French and Japanese, actually.
Yep, don't tell me.
So I'm not telling you those. Yeah. So I guess.
All right. So they... So SG-1 encounters someone that we have seen in a past episode, which could be an alien, or you know, someone from another planet, or it could be someone on Earth that they've dealt with before. So you know, could be Mayborn.
I know you're hoping for Mayborn.
I really want to see Mayborn come back. I really like that character. Mm-hmm. He's just so deliciously horrible. So I'm going to very openly wish for a Mayborn episode, but I don't think that's actually what's happening.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out when we watch the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
So all I think that's left is we've done our chevrons, we've talked through the episodes, we've done our therapy session.
This one did turn out to be kind of therapy.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think it's time to wrap this up and let the people know where they can find out more about you.
Well, when I'm not employing Patrice's services as my therapist, social media, Jay Gamet, pretty much everywhere, most active on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and PixelFed. And then just a couple podcasts out of the many that I do. Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live and The Context Machine, which I do with Brian Chaffin.
Very cool. Yeah, you could find me also, as you mentioned, on the British Tech Network. You can find out more about everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com. And yeah, we have also a social media network, our social media things together for Retro Rewatch. Mm-hmm. Things counts. Things you can reach out to us with. I don't know. Mastodon at Tech Hangout. No, sorry, at Retro Rewatch at techhangout.social.
Mm-hmm.
And we have at retrorewatch.com on Blue Sky. You can also send us an email if that's easier for you. I know, boo email, but some people like that. Mm-hmm. It's also easier if you're writing more, but please don't, because then I need to use AI to summarize it, because I'm usually not that. I don't have that much time.
Well, it's either that or you're going to say, Jeff, read that email.
Actually, that's probably more likely. I'll just tell Jeff. Jeff, can you tell me what that email is about? No, hello@retrorewatch.com, and send us an email, and I will try to read it. So there's that.
Or I will read it.
Or both of
them. And then summarize for Patrice.
Yeah, or that could also be. No, actually, I should read it, because you'll get the order wrong again. So
I will, but at least I'll have the
at least you're consistent.
I am very consistent.
Yes. Anyway, so yeah. Let's just, I don't know, drop the feather on the scale and talk next time.
I am already looking forward to planting myself on the couch and watching Past and Present.